session number 23216, reel 4.
Colonel Corbould, reel 4. Is there anything that has come into your mind that you'd like to put on the record since we last met?
Yes, there are 2 points. First of all, my correct birth, the 7th of June 1922, and while I was at Sandhurst in April 1941, the Commandant was Major General Kemp Welsh, and he, during my time at Sandhurst, which was until September 1941, was changed to Brigadier Bruxner Randall.
Did the change of personalities make any change in the way things were done?
Not at all, as far as I could see, other than the fact that I was there on one church parade one Sunday. I was the Commandant's orderly, one of the Commandant's orderlies to Brigadier Bruxner Randall.
What did that entail doing, being a Commandant's orderly?
In those days, I was with one of my friends, he was called Bill Heaton Armstrong, who went to the Grenadiers. And we had to march over from New College, where we were on the Sunday morning, and report to the Commandant at Government House. And there we escorted him to the parade ground on Old College Square and marched up and down the ranks in the approved style in front of the Commandant in slow time. Mm. But the overall conduct of our training was exactly the same.
At the end of our last session, we had reached the point where you'd arrived in Naples and
yes.
You went forward in motor transport.
That's right. And we went to a place after we'd been in Naples, we'd got into transport and we drove to a place called Sessa Arunca. S-E-S-A-A-U-R-U-N-C-A Arunca, which was by the Garigliano.
What sort of place was Sessa Arunca?
Oh, a little village, really. A rather unimportant place. There'd been no actual battle there, but it was a good forming up place.
Was it in intact condition or
it was damaged? Yes, it was in good condition.
Were the local inhabitants still there?
Yes, they were, and they were quite friendly. In those times, we really didn't have much trouble with the locals. They all were saying, Mussolini non ti buono, and they put their fingers across their throat. But how true that was, of course, I don't quite know. But they all said this was up and down Italy.
What facilities did Sessa offer you?
It was buildings. We had buildings. We were in sort of a school building where we were all an officer's part and science part and a guardsman's part. But we were all actually we were not under canvas. And from there, the battalion went off to the Battle of Ornito, which, sadly, I was LOB.
I was going to ask you what you actually did with yourself while you were LOB.
Waiting to be called forward. But I wasn't called forward, although there were a lot of casualties. Mm. And Ornito is one of our battle honours in the Coldstream.
So when did you first go forward then and into?
Then from there on, we went down to a place called San Potito, San S-A-N-P-O-T-I-T-O, where we trained, and then went up to the casino battle and into the town.
What sort of training were you doing at San Potito?
Well, I remember the very first thing we did was a marvellous drill parade. We thought we were all getting rather idle at drill. So we had, and the regimental band came out at that time. So we did the march past in slow and quick time, as is our custom, and then we went back into field training in a big way, platoon and company training. We couldn't operate in the town of Cassino as a battalion because we were in such confined space. And when we got into Cassino itself, there was a place there and where battalion headquarters set itself up. And then in my company, number 4 company, we were put into the left-hand side of the town, and I'm proud to say that my platoon, number 16, was the leading platoon of the battalion.
When you were at San Potito, did you do any training appropriate to the sort of fighting you were going to do in the town of Cassino?
Well, no, because you see, all we did in the town of Cassino rally was to go out on patrol at night and to stalk the Germans, if need be, to kill them if you came across them. And they were doing the same as far as we were concerned. So it was a bit of cat and mouse stuff. So you wouldn't really train for that. We knew that was what we were going into, close quarter fighting, if it came to that.
So, Potito, would it be right to say you said you were doing platoon attacks and so forth, as if you were in the open field?
Yeah, there was quite a lot of open countryside around San Potito. Yeah. And we were able to do that, yes. We did a lot of belly exercises there.
How did you get into Cassino itself, then?
On our flat feet.
On your flat feet?
We had to march quite a long way along a thing called the Mad Mile. And it was called the Mad Mile because the Germans always had a Spandau covering this particular long route going into a casino. We had to cross all sorts of bailey bridges to get in there. Mm. And it was all done by night. And the Germans would simply let off very lights and so on and just let drive down the mad mile.
Had you actually had an opportunity to see where you were going in daylight before you moved in?
No. We arrived there at night, and I can remember we took over from the 2nd New Zealand Armoured Division.
How did you find your way to the position?
It's a very good question indeed. Mainly by dead bodies. We were told, turn right at the dead New Zealander, keep going until you come across an Italian, turn right at the next German, etc., etc., etc. It sounds very crude. It sounds as if I'm not telling the truth, but that is, in fact, how we found our way.
Did they give you any sort of map or sketch map to help guide you?
No. Obviously, we looked at the Tanaka Casino, yes. But, I mean, we couldn't read the map going into into this position. We were eventually led into a position that finally, as it was dark, out of one of these sangers, as they were called, appeared a figure, a New Zealander, said, "Oi, this is where you're taking over from us from here."
What were your orders then when you went forward into? What were you told in your O group before going into positions in casino?
We were told it was going to be very close quarters stuff. We had to be very quiet. We were living in the sangers. We had to pay particular attention to our patrolling activity. And we had to attend to all the requirements of nature and keeping ourselves clean and hygienic and so on while we were in there in this very, very confined space. And in the sangers, of course, there were one or two floorboards, and under the floorboards, of course, were rats of a most enormous size feeding on all the dead corpses.
Were you given any indication of how long you were going to be there in position?
We were told we were there for at least a week. And I was there a week, but I was there over a week. And then at dawn one morning, the Germans came very... We could hear the Germans all the time we were there, and they could hear us. Mm. We could smell them frying up their food and so on, and it's because they smelt us too. But at dawn one morning, there was a most almighty commotion outside our sangar, and a whole lot of lead came pouring in. And this was a concerted patrol attack with grenades. And I got hit on that particular occasion with another man. And we both had to be evacuated.
So you got wounded in your first action, effectively?
During that week, yes, mm. yes. It was the 21st of April, to be precise, that I was wounded in 1944. Which, of course, it was the birthday of her then... Her Royal Highness, Princess Elizabeth, now of course the Queen. And I always remember that date.
So you were led forward into the town. Roughly what sort of area or front was your platoon occupying, and how were they deployed when you got into position?
Three sections. I had one forward section, which was, I suppose, about perhaps 20, 50 yards ahead of where we were, and then I had two other sections on the left and the right, and I was platoon headquarters in the middle.
What's a little rough semicircle?
A rough semicircle. Mind you, of course, it was complete and utter debris all the way around. There wasn't one brick standing on top of another. Mm. It was the most hideous sight. When the first time we saw it, actually, was well after this. It was the end of May when we went back into the town again. And first time we actually saw the whole place in daylight. And I remember so well my platoon sergeant, Sergeant Patterson, he put his hand on my forearm and said, "Sir, if anyone wants to start another war, let them have a look at this lot." Mm. It was indescribable, the carnage and the filth and the stink and the stench and everything. It was absolutely unbelievable.
What was your own position like, the position of your platoon headquarters?
It was inside a hangar, and we'd got sort of a roof. It had been carved out of a building, mm. and been stones removed, and they kept on the roof, mm. Which when that particular morning when we had the grenade attack, which could also, I think it might have been some mortars thrown in as well, there was a hell of a explosion going on, and lead flying in all directions, and the top of the roof started to rattle. And we thought at first we were going to get buried alive, but thank God the actual roof held. It was rocking like mad.
Who'd made this roof? Was it the New Zealanders?
I suppose the New Zealanders had done, yes, yes.
What have they made it of?
Well, it was just propped up. Mm. It was extraordinary things what one found there. You see, there's a lot of timber lying around. they'd be able to get things to prop up the roof a bit.
So you've got a sangar effectively made of debris with overhead cover.
Yes.
Yes. Could you fire from it?
No, you couldn't. Yeah. No. And we had to live in a circle.
Yes.
My platoon sergeant was opposite me, and then the guardsmen, and we had another NCO at the end, deep inside. Well, when I say deep inside, it was only, I suppose, about 8 feet long.
Yeah.
And then round the other side, I had a guardsman beside me, my wireless operator.
Did the wireless work effectively?
It did, odd enough, yes. Yes, it did. Yes.
It's rather strange considering all the clutter that must have been.
It's quite extraordinary. And we also had a field telephone there, too.
Did that go?
The wire kept on being broken with shell fans, but it was able to be mended quite easily.
How did you communicate with your forward sections? You know, your section forward.
Well, really, by going out to see them. I had no communication wireless wise with them, but they were only really a sort of matter of 60 yards ahead, so one would crawl out at night, particularly, and go and see them. In actual fact, that particular section, during another attack, got heavily clobbered, and the three men were killed.
Well, was there constant fighting? Were there attacks all the time, or were these?
No, it was. Sometimes 2 or 3 days would go by and no attack at all, but we were out every night patrolling.
How did you go about patrolling? What sort of strength did you have? And where did you go?
Two men, probably. I would go out with two men, and either I was in the platoon headquarters or the platoon sergeant was. We had to be one officer there. And so I normally went out every night, I much preferred myself, with a couple of guardsmen. And we just patrolled around our area, up to the forward section positions on either side, and then return. It was a good deal of climbing up and down rubble hills, too.
How long would that take you, then, if you were going round the position?
I suppose we'd spend in the neighbourhood of about an hour, to perhaps just over an hour, crawling around.
What sort of distance would you be able to cover in that hour?
Oh, a matter of yards. I mean, a few yards. If we caught a German one night, and he was attending to the call of nature, but he didn't have to attend to it again.
What happened to him, then?
Well, he was shot.
He was shot. Could you actually see anything when you were moving around at night through the...
Oddly enough, not a great deal, because we had our own artillery firing shell fire, firing shells over to smoke us all off, so we could get around. And, of course, this was rather claustrophobic, because one was taking in a certain amount of smoke as well.
Could you hear anything at night? Was that a...
Yes, you could hear the Germans talking, yes. Mm. Oh, yes. One could... They didn't do so much patrolling as we did, I don't think.
How far away were they? How far away were the closest Germans?
I think the closest Germans were 75 yards. And there we lived. Mm. And we spoke in whispers nearly all the time. The only thing was, of course, the guards have got the most tremendous sense of humour, and every now and again, an awful roar of laughter would go up and we'd quieten the chaps down.
could they see from their forward positions, the sections that were out?
The sections that were out, they couldn't see more than, I think, 25 yards, 50 yards at the most, if they were lucky. And that would be probably around a corner or something like that. Mm.
It's a very short line of sight.
A very, very short line of sight indeed, yes.
Did you have any means of making obstacles to make the positions more defensible? Wire, for example, or mines, or anything like that sort of thing?
No.
Were the positions able to give each other mutual support?
I didn't think they would, you see, because there was so much rubble around. Mm. I mean, the sections couldn't see each other.
They couldn't.
The left one couldn't see the right one, and vice versa.
But you know, even if that's the case, one might have been able to cover the approaches to another.
That is true.
An enemy would use.
That is true. So. But then, of course, they had awful trouble moving themselves.
Yes.
And we were constantly on the lookout.
Did you mount any actual attacks on the enemy positions?
Not from there, no. Not until the final Operation Honker.
Yes.
I think it was called Operation Honker, yes it was, which started at about 11 o'clock one night in May, this was. And then, of course, people were able to go out and winkle the Germans out with the bayonet, yes.
But on your first deployment, when you were there, you were holding your ground.
You're holding our ground.
Patrolling.
Patrolling, and that was all at that time. But Honker came, because a month later.
What did you do in the daytime when you couldn't actually move? Or
you slept. You attended to personal hygiene. And you eat.
Were you able to sleep in those...
Oh, yes, we had a bit of sleep, yes. I really can't remember very much about it. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to stretch out, because the guards are being very tall chaps. To sort of sleep with their legs bent up and so on. Mm-hmm. It was a relief to go out at night and go on a patrol. Mm-hmm. So you could stretch your legs properly and stand up properly.
Now, you mentioned feeding. How were you resupplied? How did
every night we had porters came up from battalion headquarters, and they would come right to the four positions with mail, with newspapers, and with food and water.
That sounds like room service in a first-class hotel.
It was. we were in a hotel called the Hotel de Roses. What was left of it.
And you mentioned you had two attacks. What about bombardment? Were the Germans mortaring and shelling you persistently, or was that something that...
No, not persistently. The main one which came in, which I've described to you, which was the dawn attack.
Mortar and grenade,
yes. Mm. And that was, and of course, you see, with all the rubble around, I mean, the lead was flying in all directions, as you might well imagine.
What, ricochets?
Ricochets, yes, okay. Yes.
Did you have any warning of this attack?
No, none at all.
No intimation.
Suddenly,
at
dawn one morning, all hell was let loose. Mm. And we, of course, stood to arms and started ready to fire and so on and so forth. But we didn't see anybody at all. We never saw a soul.
It was just the grenades coming in.
That was right, and then, yes, of course, they escarpered off.
Yes. Do you have any idea what sort of strength they might have been?
I would think they were probably no more than about three or four chaps, yes, rather like we would have been.
Yes. It was a quick tip-and-run attack.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes.
How were you injured then? Were you injured by a grenade or by a mortar?
Grenade. I got part of a grenade in my neck still. Oh. They had it in my elbow and in my shoulder, mm, as well.
Well, did it come right into your...
Yes, well, the chaplain, yeah, odd enough, the chap next to me got it in the stomach, poor man. Mm. And he did not survive. That's, he didn't die there and then, but he died later on.
Yeah. How were you evacuated then?
Walked out. Mm. I was able to walk out, got it in the leg as well, but I was able to scramble out, went back to the RAP.
Mm. And how far back was that, the RAP?
That was around about, I suppose, 200 yards, something like that. Yeah.
Presumably you had to wait till night to get back.
But it was the same place where this was in the battalion quarter, mm, bunker.
Did you have any first aid before you went back that evening?
No, I didn't. No. Well, mm, the doctor looked at me, so I said, well, mm, nothing very much we can do here.
But when you were still in the position immediately after the attack, was anyone able to give you a first aid with shell dressings or anything like that?
No. Well, I didn't want that at all. I felt I wanted to go back to the platoon, but the doctor wouldn't let me go.
They tend to be autocratic about these things.
Well, they do, yes, yes.
So you got yourself back. What about the guardsman who'd been wounded in the stomach?
He had to be, of course, stretchered back. Mm. But I thought of that first of all, yes, mm, yes.
So you got back to the...
Battalion quarters of RAP.
And you'd been in the line for a week or so.
About that, yes, yes.
Had you had any other casualties that stage?
At that stage, we hadn't. No, we hadn't. There were very few casualties actually in the town of Cassino. In fact, myself and this guardsman and one or two other chaps in another position, I think the Welsh guards who were on our extreme right, I think they had some during that time, but comparatively few casualties at that particular time.
Sounds like you were very unlucky.
Very unlucky indeed.
That particular.
Very unlucky, mm, indeed, yes.
So you saw the doctor, and did he give you any treatment? Or?
Well, he sort of put some dressings on my wounds, yes, yes. Bound me up, but I was able to walk back. And I was seen out of, the chap who came back with me out of casino was the Roman Catholic padre, a man called George Forbes. Mm.
So the doctor told you to go back, did he? Where were you sent back to?
I was then sent back to the casualty clearing station, well behind the lines, then of course onto a train, and then taken down to Benevento.
What did they do at the casualty clearing station? Did they do any further treatment, or did they just...
No, they shipped me straight onto a train.
It was a special hospital train.
It was a hospital train, mm, where there were QA nurses, which was a very great sight. A very relieving sight to see, indeed, after all this years of weeks of not having seen a lady at all.
Of course. And what happened at Benevento?
Oh, well, then I got put into the operating table, and they took out bits, mm, and pieces of me, mm, and I was put into a ward. And luckily, I was able to get back to the battalion within about a fortnight, so I wasn't mm, too badly done.
Mm. What were the battalion doing when you rejoined them?
They were still in Casino. They were up at I had to go back into a different position up on Castle Hill, which was a feature below the Monastery Hill.
How far from the actual castle were you?
We were actually in the castle.
You were in the castle.
Yes. And a terrible thing happened there. A Commissar Major Manders by name. We were shelled fairly frequently up on the castle position. And there was a whole lot of grenades on a shelf. And if you would you believe it, one of the shells came up and hit this box of grenades. A whole lot went up. Before his army Manders caught the lot.
Presumably he did not survive.
He did not survive. Instantly killed, yes. Yes.
What condition was the castle in when you first went into it?
Well, it was just a ruin. Mm. A total ruin. The odd sort of very big things were still, pillars were still standing up, arches and so on and so forth, but the whole thing was practically flat with the ground.
What sort of defensive positions were you in there?
Again, we were being above the town, we were able to look down on the town. So we were able to keep an eye on what the Germans were doing below us. Mm. And therefore we were in a rather supreme position, and then we could fire down on them, but they couldn't fire up at us.
It must have been very comforting.
Very comforting indeed, yes. Mm. Spandars, that was a great thing. There was a magnificent weapon which they had, the spandar. I don't know what their rate of fire was, but it was very great indeed.
But above you, presumably, there was the Monastery Hill.
The Monastery Hill.
Hangman's Hill, and
that's
then
right.
The Monastery beyond.
And the Monastery beyond. And then, of course, the Poles came into action there. Mm. And they took over the attack on the monastery, as you know.
What sort of routine did you have when you were in the castle?
Very much the same as when we were in the town. The great thing was keeping clean. And also the fact was that all this shelling going on, there was a hell of a lot of dust flying around. So one was permanently covered in dust with grit in your hair and all that sort of thing, you know. Mm.
Were you back with the same platoon as you've had before?
I went back to my own platoon, yes. Yeah. I was 16 platoon.
Who looked after them while you've been away?
I can't remember who the officer was at all. I don't know. But I was put back to my own platoon. It was a tremendous thing, this platoon spirit that one built up as a platoon commander. And, of course, the company commander had the company there as well. And if you went away, like I did, for about a fortnight or 3 weeks, whatever it was, I was able, they were very keen to put you back in the same bunch of chaps, because the team spirit, and we all knew how each other worked. Now, incidentally, rejoining the battalion, it was quite amusing. Coming back from Benevento, I was sent in a TCV, a transport carrying vehicle, to some large camp. And I thought, I'm not going to go to that large camp, it's ridiculous, I'm going back to the battalion. And I was planning as to how I could do this. And I was sitting at the very end of the TCV, overlooking the door and so on. And suddenly to the convoy, there appeared a Mercedes-Benz. And behind the wheel was a chap wearing a Coldstream Star, who turned out to be a man called Christopher Soames, who became rather a famous chap later on. And so I did this to him, signaled. And he gave me the thumbs up. And he kept behind my vehicle. And the next convoy stopped. I leapt out, got into the car, he shoved it in gear, and away I went.
You were a runaway.
I was a runaway. And was posted as absent without leave, too.
Absent without leave from the transit camp. Very serious.
So they called the roll, and Corbyn didn't answer his name. So they got in touch with the battalion. They said, oh, don't worry, he's a bit back. Too late.
So you got back illegally to the battalion, and you're back in 16 platoon.
Yep.
And were they in the castle when you joined them, or did you go up?
No, we went up to the castle, which was quite a climb. Mm. We were able to go up on a pathway.
Yes.
There was a time at one stage, which I omitted to tell you, when we were in the actual town itself, we wanted to get up onto some high ground, and we got hold of some ropes, and we did a bit of rope climbing in the town, on a line with the German lines, and for some extraordinary reason, they didn't fire at us. Mm. This was at night, and very sad, this particular night, one of our shells landed amongst us, one of our chaps was killed.
Mm. When you went up to the castle, was that a night approach, or did you go up in daylight?
That was a night approach, yes, up this steep hill at a pathway, and into the grounds of the, into the rubble of the castle. Mm.
Was there any attempt to interfere with that? Were they only putting harassing fire or
No.
When you were in the castle, then you said that a shell hit the grenade. Presumably
yes.
The castle was under fire most of the time.
A lot of the time, yes. It was a very tricky business indeed. And of course, we had such a confined space. Mm. There was a company command, a company headquarters, and a platoon. We were all there. The other two platoons were elsewhere, but we were actually with company headquarters. And so there was very little space. and not really much room for manoeuvre.
When you were looking down into the town, you said that you could fire on the Germans. Does that mean you were shooting with your platoon weapons, or you could bring down artillery or mortar fire on them?
Both. Yeah. Both. We had the gunners, of course, were very good. The Ayrshire Yeomanry supported us, and they were very good gunners indeed. Mm. They were rather lucky. One of their battery commanders, in fact, had been a Coldstream stream officer.
Could you actually hit anything, you know, from that elevated position in the cars? What sort of range were you shooting at?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, one could. But I'm sure there's a bunker there, so you would let fly it, which might be a matter of about, I suppose, downhill, 300 yards, something like that.
That's quite close to the enemy.
It was quite close, yeah. So we were able to give as good as we got there. Mm. But, of course, they knew we were in the castle.
Of course.
Hence we kept on getting shelled. Mm.
Did you go out at night patrolling in the same way as you had in the town?
No. That was quite out of the question. Mm. And in any case, we were above the town. The Germans were down there.
And presumably the Germans were higher up the hill towards the abbey.
They were, yes, the monastery. But and there's no doubt about it at all that this is, it's a very debatable point, but we know for an absolute fact that the Germans used the monastery as an observation post. Mm. Never mind what anyone else says. We knew that. And in any case, before Field Marshal Alexander ordered the bombing of the monastery, they had a flight went over, a recce flight, RAF, and they saw Germans actually in positions on the hill outside the monastery. And so the field marshal said, right, that's it. And so it was bombed.
How long were you in the castle?
I think we were in the castle around about 10 days, I should think. Mm. Yes, because our next engagement was on the 28th of May, which was Whit Sunday, 1944, at a place called Archie, A-R-C-E.
Did you have any casualties while you were in the castle, in your platoon?
Not in my platoon, I didn't, no. No, not there. Lucky.
Very lucky. Was it the same in that you had most of your activity at night and you were quiet in the day, or were you able
to... Yes, it was pretty well like that, yes. It was mainly night stuff, yes. Mm. Hence, we never really saw the town properly. Mm. Until it fell, but sometime, I suppose, the 20th of May. I can't remember the exact date.
Did you see that happening?
Oh yes.
Mm. What did you see on the day that?
Well, we were going round, getting the Germans, telling them to, you know, surrender. Mm. Because this was the Fallschirm Jäger. They were rather loath to surrender, but then they saw the whole thing was picked up. Mm. All their chaps had gone, and they were the only people left behind, so we whittled them out with bayonets and so on and so forth. And I don't think any of them actually required to be bayoneted. I think they'd had enough by then.
I was going to ask whether they resisted as you were clearing through the
remnants
of the town.
Not better, no. Mm. I don't remember that, no. Mm.
Sounds though the fight had gone out of them.
I think it probably had a bit at that time, yes, mm. yes. Because they'd had a hell of a pounding. And when, I mean, the opening salvo for Operation Honka had to be heard to be believed, the whole earth shook. Every gun from about, I suppose, 3 or 4 miles back had opened fire.
You mentioned the Poles. Did you see anything of them?
Yes, I saw the Poles coming out of the monastery, after they'd actually captured it, yes. Mm. Yes.
How far away was the monastery, roughly?
Way up the hill? Oh, gosh, I suppose it must be quite a long way. Mm. I should think it's a neighbourhood of about, perhaps, let me think now, 500-600 yards, something like that. And they were coming down the hill, jubilant, of course. Jubilant.
What did you do?
Patted the ball on the back. Well, as it went by, you know.
Yes. What did you do with these Germans then when you were getting them out of the?
Oh, we took them. They were sent back to prisoners. Mm. Oh, we did play fair.
What sort of condition were they in when you were rounding them up?
Oh, they were all right. They were rather like us, you know. They were quite well fed, and we were quite well fed. Yes, mm. yes. They played very dirty with us at a subsequent. Just after Casino, at this place Archie, and two Germans came over the hill, and with their hands up, and.